Churanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Vanachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jai Vishnabhava Paramahamsa Buddhagacharya Astotarita Sri Srimadha Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Bibhiti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Vishnabhava Paramahamsa Buddhagacharya Astotarita Sri Srimadha is Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Kuntura Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Narayana Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jai Mudirayet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta prayesha bandreshu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavat yuttama shloke Bhaktim bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Forgive me, I forgot to bring my little light, so I'm going to read off the computer. We are reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, The Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 28, Paranjan Becomes a Woman in the Next Life, Text 43. Is that on the board? Text 43. Patim. Patim. Padamadharma. Gyam. Vaidarbhi. Malayadvajam. Premna Paracharad, I'm sorry, Parayacharad, Ditva, Bogan, Sa, Patidevata, Patim Padamadharma Gyam, Vaidarbhi Malayadvajam, Premna Parayacharad, Ditva, Bhogan sa pati devata patim padam dharma gyam Vaidarbhimalayadvajam Premna Paryachadandhitva Bhogansa Patidevata Patim Padamadharmagyam Vaidarbhimalayadvajam Premna Paryachadandhitva Bhogan Sapati Devata
Pating Paramadharma Gyam Vaidarbhi Malayadvajam Vaidarbhi Malayadvajam Bhogan Sapati Devata
Pating Paramadharma Gyam Vaidarbhi Malayandvajam Bremna Paryachadandhitva Bhogansa Pati Devata Patim Padamadharmangyam Vaidarbhi Malayandvajam Bremna Paryachadandhitva Bhogan Sapati Dev. Ladies? Vaidarbhi Malayandvajam. Ladies? Vaidarbhi Malayadvajam Patim Padma Dharma Gyam Vaidarbhi Malayanvajam Bremna Paryachadanditva Vagansa Patim, her husband, Padma, Supreme Dharma Gyam. Knower of religious principles. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vaidarbha. I'm sorry, the daughter of Vidarbha. Malayadvajam, named Malayadvaja. Premna, with love and affection. Paryacharat, served in devotion. Hitva, giving up. Bhogan, sense enjoyments. Sa, she. Patidevata, accepting her husband as the Supreme Lord. Translation, the daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the Supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband who was so advanced. Thus, she remained engaged in his service. Please repeat. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the Supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in his service. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Figuratively, King Malayadvaja is the spiritual master and his wife, Vaidarbhi, is the disciple. The disciple accepts the spiritual master as the supreme personality of Godhead. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Gurav Ashtaka Sakshad Haritvena, one directly accepts the guru, the spiritual master, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Close quote. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense that the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. Since the spiritual master is the most confidential servant of the Lord, he should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. If a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. If she remains engaged in the service of her exalted husband, she will automatically attain the spiritual perfections of her husband. If a disciple gets a bona fide spiritual master, simply by satisfying him, he can attain a similar opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So here we find that Vaidarbhi, who we always should always remember, is the rebirth of King Paranjana. King Paranjana, although he was completely engaged in sensual activities with his wife, material activities, he also performed certain pious activities. And those pious activities gave him the opportunity to take the birth that he did, which was the daughter of King Vidarbha and ultimately the wife of Malayadraja, who we find is a pure devotee, a king who is now out in the forest. And as we've read in earlier verses, he's now come to realize the super soul or Krishna in the heart and is completely transcendental to material activities and a fully realized, God-realized soul. So Vaidarbhi, in this adventure, if you will, now here's imagine what this is like. You have this queen and a king. Now the queen is used to all of the queenly accoutrements, living in the palace, having so many servants, maid servants, and living a very comfortable life. It reminds one of what happened with Sita. But Sita also went out to follow her husband Ram into the forest and underwent great austerities. So the same thing is there with this Vaidarbhi. She is a very humble and menial servant of her husband. And in all of his efforts here, his great austerities, which we've read about, which ultimately culminated in his full realization, she's serving him as he needs to be served so that he'll be successful in this effort to become fully self-realized. And in the course of doing that, she is taking the role of a disciple. A disciple, as we learn from so many elements of Shastra, needs to be in that position of a menial servant of the spiritual master. There are so many quotes in the Shastra that can describe that. One is we mentioned earlier, Tad vijnanatam sa gurume bhavagacchet samit pani shrotriyam brahmanishtram. This is from the Mukunda, the Mukti Upanishad, I forget. So Prabhupada quoted this all the time. If one is serious about getting vijnan, this is what this first part means, tad vijnanartam, for the purpose of getting realized knowledge about the Supreme, one cannot go to an ordinary university or a learned person. One has to find a realized guru. And it is imperative. It's not optional. Evabhigacchet, Prabhupada described this as a form of the verb that means it is absolutely necessary to do. So how should one go? Summit pani, with firewood in one's hands. This is a phrase that indicates menial service. And we get the wonderful example of Krishna himself in the story in the latter part of the 10th canto when Sudama Brahman goes to visit Krishna. He's so happy to receive him. It's a wonderful story. He embraces him, even though the Brahmin is so poor. He can't even eat properly. He's skinny. His clothes are disheveled. But he's a Brahmin. He's very austere, very pure, very knowledgeable, and he's Krishna's old friend. So he honors him. He washes his feet. He places the water on his own head. It's so endearing how Krishna is serving his own devotee. And then he starts recounting the old days when they were in the school of Sandipani Muni. Krishna also showed by his example that everyone has to take a spiritual master. After he had killed Kamsa, then he was then again in the role of the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, and they put him in the Gurukul. He and Balaram went to the Gurukul with Sandeep and Imuni. They were pretty exceptional students, if you remember. It took them one day to learn each of the arts. So anyway, they were exceptional students, but they took that role of menial servant as examples, as did Lord Chaitanya himself, who's Krishna himself. So in that role, he was out getting firewood for the spiritual master. And by his own arrangement, a big storm came up, and he and Sudama were out in the forest alone all night, freezing, you know, supposedly, and didn't know the way back home. And so the next morning, Sandeepini Muni and the other disciples came, looked for them, and found them. And Sandeepini Muni was very appreciative, and he even said so at that time, of how this is the standard for a disciple, is to do any service that's needed or that's asked from the spiritual man. So this is a principle that's universal. And by that humble service, then one gets the blessings of the spiritual master. He is so favorable that he enlightens one with everything. He opens his heart and the storehouse of knowledge and gives all blessings to the disciple. So who is that spiritual master? Kshotriyam Brahmanishtam. This is also mentioned in this verse. Kshotriyam means completely absorbed in the message of the Vedas, the Shrutis, and fixed in Brahman. Another verse Prabhupada would always quote about the spiritual master. This is from the 11th canto in the instructions of the 9 Yogendras to Maharaj Nimi. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyashu shreya uttamam shabde padechanishnatam brahman yupashamashriyam. So this verse begins with the word tasmat. Now tasmat means therefore. So there's something comes before it. Otherwise you don't say therefore, right? So I was doing a little research and reading before. I'd been familiar with this. And what the question is, for King Nimi's question, I forget which particular one of the 9 Yogendras answers. But the question is, how can one cross over this dangerous ocean of birth and death? This should be the question of all human beings. We should not try to enjoy in this ocean of birth and death or in this forest fire. We should ask that question, how can I cross over? How can I get to the point of relief of all miseries? That's the original question of what it means to be a human being. So he describes very succinctly, and this is what's so wonderful about the Bhagavatam. It's imbued with true eloquence. Does anyone know the definition of true eloquence? Who remembers from the Adi Leela?
Absolute truth spoken concisely is true eloquence.
Thank you. Absolute truth spoken concisely is true eloquence. And that phrase itself is very concise and very eloquent. So the Bhagavatam is like that. All of our shastras are like that. Very concise and very essential knowledge spoken. And so they're all eloquent. So in a few verses, he describes the material condition. And so what he says there is that we come into this world and we unite with the opposite sex, and we then expand our field of enjoyment. And we have to have some money. We have our relatives. We have our children and so forth and our house. But inevitably, our efforts for happiness in this world produce exactly the opposite effect. This comes up again and again in the Bhagavatam. Maharaj has several verses like that. So this is the nature. And then again, we die. And again, we're taking birth. Perhaps as a human being, perhaps not, and try again to enjoy this holocaust, you know, and try to make our way, somehow find a place of safety or security and enjoyment in this holocaust. And again, we're defeated. Again and again, it goes on millions and millions of times. This is a description, like 3 or 4 verses. Therefore, he says, Shreya, if you're interested in the ultimate good, in other words, beyond all of this duality of pleasure and pain, mostly pain. You know, the pleasure is illusory, and the pain is also illusory, but it's very real to us. All of this duality holocaust, which Krishna has certified dukkhalayam as the abode of misery, then one has to approach this bona fide guru who is himself beyond the dualities. So that's what this means. Shabde padechanishnatam brahmani upashamashayam. He is absorbed in the Brahmani, in the Supreme Absolute Truth, in these two forms, Shabde and Pare. Again, the scripture mentioned here. The scriptures, the realized scriptures, and Pare, the Supreme, what supreme Personality of Godhead. So, an Upashama Ashrayam, having taken complete shelter of Upashama, in other words, being completely free of the dualities of this world, being pacified. The heart is impervious to the pains and the pleasures and the allurements in this material world, because on the transcendental platform. Two lines, about six or eight words, the position of the pure devotee is mentioned here. So we should want that ultimate good. Now, this has been an object of search from philosophy from time immemorial, East and West. And if you ever study Western philosophy, they all are looking for that ultimate good. I remember studying Plato. What is the good with a capital G? I know. But they have no access to understanding that, because they're bound by the limitations of their mind. And they may have very big brains, big intelligence, but they can only get a little reflection of what it is to be the ultimate good. So here we have the imperative to approach that realized soul. And then there's this, this comes up in the purport, how should one regard him? And of course we get in our prayer from Vishwanath Chakravarti, Sakshad Bharit Vena Samasta Shastra Ukta. So all the Shastra declare that one should regard the Guru as good as Hari. So this word Hari Twena, the ending, TVA, means ness. Or, in other words, godness, having the quality of God, but don't fall into the trap of thinking that he is God. This is the fine line sometimes, and we should make that point very clear in other places. Because you find in San Francisco, Washington, D.C., there's so many embassies, and if you want to get a passport, you have to approach the embassy of that country and so forth. So there's an ambassador from all of these countries. And those ambassadors live in the little diplomatic, in the embassy, and that embassy is not ruled by the same laws. It's a little place that's just like the original country. So, and the ambassador is representing the will and the power of the leader of the country. So similarly, the spiritual master is representing Krishna perfectly. And therefore, because Krishna is so great, he's so remote, invisible to us in his original spiritual form now, but the spiritual master, the guru, he's the ambassador, he makes Krishna accessible through him. That's why Prabhupada always used this phrase, pure via medium. It's transparent via medium. A nice example was given the other day by Sri Satchinandan about the glass. You know, the glass is a medium for the light to come through, right? So if the glass is dirty, you can't see. But if the glass is very clear, then you don't even see it's there. So that you can see what's through on the other side. So the spiritual master is here. He comes to this world. He walks with us, talks, and gives us access to the Supreme through that pure medium of his own consciousness and his own words and his own presence. So we shouldn't make the mistake, however, of thinking that because the realized guru is on the level of the Lord and is the pure representative of the Lord, it should be worshipped on the level of the Lord, that he is God. And this is a very important distinction. One of the qualities that Krishna has is the omniscience. God can be defined in general terms, as he is in the Bible, as omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. Isn't it? You think about it. This omnipotent, so many subcategories we have, right? The internal energies, the marginal energy, the external energies, there's so many categories that we can. But that word omnipotent certainly applies to Krishna. He's all powerful. He's certainly omnipresent through the super soul. Every atom, every heart, Krishna's there, right? Overseeing everything. And omniscient, by virtue of that omnipresence as the super soul, he's also omniscient. Veda hamsamatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishani tabutani mamtuvenana kashtana. Krishna says, I know everything that happened in the past. Just try to wrap your mind about that in a minute. What does that mean? You know, can we even conceive of that? We can't even remember what we did yesterday, every little thing. And Krishna knows what everyone did yesterday and all the yesterdays. And not only what everyone did, but everything that happened. Everywhere at every time. It's just inconceivable. And everything's happening now, everything that will happen in the future. But me, no one knows, Krishna says. So that kind of power, that kind of omniscience is unique to God. Unique to God. Even though there may be so many greatly exalted souls, even Lord Brahma, he doesn't have that kind of omniscience. Right? He was bewildered by Krishna. He forgot that little Krishna was God. Brahma Vimohana. So he doesn't have that kind of omniscience that Krishna has. Right? Even Lord Shiva. Right? He wanted to find out about the material energy, you know, how your material, your bewildering energy is working or whatever. And Mohini Murti came and he was bewildered. Right? So, only Krishna is omniscient. This is a very important point. And I'd like to read something now that you may not have heard before. This is a statement about the omniscience by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in relation to the pure devotee and relation to omniscience. But it is not for us or anyone. This is from a book or a collection of his lectures called Divine Governance, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It is not for us or anyone to fully know the ways of God. We are only aware of that much of the divine activity as is helpful to us for his service. The least particle of such knowledge is more than sufficient for all the purposes of our pure souls, of our pure souls. The person who knows God does not understand his ways in the sense in which the Godhead understands them. He understands them in the measure that is necessary for having his conscious share in those activities as a subservient of his subservience. So this is talking about exalted, you know, the Manjari Bhava, you know, being, you know, your form, you know, your activities, you know, your dress, you know, all these things. But you don't know everything that's happening in the material world, what happened yesterday or those things. That's not necessary for the service. You understand? So that omniscience, your realized soul, could be more realized. But this is what he's talking about here. Admission to the plane of service is equivalent to the cessation of spiritual ignorance. Spiritual enlightenment does not mean that the person so enlightened understands all things as God himself understands them, either of this or of any other world. What such a person actually understands is his own relationship to and location in the uncovered plane of the absolute reality. Instead of being an insignificant, ignorant actor in the mundane cosmos, he finds himself to be the most insignificant conscious entity in the plane of the supramundane sphere of all existence, all knowledge, and all joy, Satchidananda realm, the spiritual world. He consciously shares in the life of that realm in the tiny measure of his eligibility for the service of God. On this mundane plane, in the conditioned state, we are anxious to know all things in the fullest measure, even as God himself knows them. This bad ambition, properly enough, is impossible of realization. If it were possible for us to know everything, the distinction between God and ourselves would cease. Such ambition is the outcome of our attitude of disloyalty toward God. It proves that we are not willing to tolerate the domination of God. We are anxious to become God. This unnatural delusion is kept up by our experiences of this world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. So this is an important understanding in relation to our Srila Prabhupada as well. And that he was obviously living, if you will, on two planes at once. This is spoken of in the Shastra. He was constantly 24 hours a day engaging in his own personal service to Krishna and within his heart. And in that sense, he was living in Goloka. He never left Vrindavan. He never left the spiritual world. Isn't it? He's always there. But at the same time, out of his great compassion and mercy, he walked among us. He spoke our language. Isn't it? He struggled in so many ways. You read the Prabhupada Lilamrita to begin the movement, to practice the movement. I was just realizing this the other day, you know, one of the dangers we have is to take things for granted. This is spoken of in Upadeshamrita, in the Yamagraha. All right, with devotees, you know, 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, you know, you just take it for granted. You know, you just plug in the iPod and here's Prabhupada talking, wonderful lectures, hundreds, thousands of lectures, or 1,200, whatever it is, you know. You can anytime you want to hear Prabhupada. But just think a minute what that means, that as he, you know, as he got older, he was continuing to show his incredible compassion, going to like obscure places like Gainesville, you know, or some place that there were only a few devotees, or even if there were a lot of devotees, whatever it was, still coming back to L.A., you know, in 1976, you know, to give his association, to speak on the simple principles of devotional service again and again and again. What does that evince of Srila Prabhupada's character? You know, this infinite compassion that he had in love, that he would put himself out in that situation and still continue to, you know, give us his association in all the ways that he did. And even up to the final moment, we see he's still giving these purports, giving this Bhagavatam to us. So this is, but at the same time, he's always on that higher plane. So what does it mean, you know, for myself, like as an editor? It's a difficult service. Because we understand the spiritual master, you know, the great acharyas are beyond the four defects, you know, and no mistakes, no illusion, no imperfect senses, no cheating. So what happens when I find something that doesn't work grammatically in English? Do I change it? Someone might think, well, this is a mistake, you know, but there's no mistakes. Oh my God, what do I do? You know, so. And it's not only that, you know, there are other instances where one has to see how Prabhupada gave us service to do by completing his service, if you will. He started this temple, right? He started this temple, what, at La Cienega or before that, I forget, you know, with a few devotees. And even he was here in this particular room, this temple. But this temple has developed so much afterward. Right? After Prabhupada gave the instructions, so many things have developed. How the wonderful gift store is here, and the prasadam distribution to the restaurant, and so many things that Prabhupada didn't specifically give us or oversee, isn't it? So but it's understood. Oh, we should, you know, develop the yatra, develop the dham, and do so many things. And so, in a similar way, sometimes we see that. Srila Prabhupada left us service to do under his instruction to edit his books, right? To make his words more accessible. You can always listen to, you know, we can always listen to the tapes of Srila Prabhupada. We can now make DVDs or even transcripts. They even had, right, in the early days before the folio, all the lectures of Prabhupada, all the conversations, you can get all the books. Why don't we distribute those books? Is that more authentic Prabhupada than Bhagavad Gita as it is, or the Journey of Self-Discovery? No, they're both authentic Prabhupada, but the transcript of the lecture, as we see every Sunday, when we see, is a little hard to follow unless you're a devotee, unless you can understand things, right? It's not as accessible to the general reader as something that's edited by a native English speaker and so forth. So that's a service to Prabhupada. If he half quotes a verse, if he quotes Janma Karma Medivyam Yojanati Tatvataha, he would always quote that verse that way. Janma Karma Medivyam Yojanati Tatvataha. Now, those who know the Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Medivyam Evam Yoveti Tatvataha. That's how the verse actually goes in the Gita, which Prabhupada gave us, right? But he always quoted it that other way. Now, he would, even in his purports, as he's sitting there, not just in the lectures. So, what do? We put down Janma Karma Chamedivyam Evam Yoveti Tatvataha. Why? Because Prabhupada wanted us to present the books in as authoritative way as possible. And if someone reading that purport, who knows the Bhagavad Gita, and hopefully everyone, more and more people are knowing Bhagavad Gita, they're going to say, what is this? They, the editors, misquoted a verse. You know? They messed it up. It will detract from the impact of the book. Unless the verse is quoted exactly as it appears in the Bhagavad Gita text. You see the point? So there has to be, now who's to judge you know, what to change and what not today. What to change. Those who were here for the Prabhupada festival heard a story. If you heard Hari Sari in his wonderful presentations of the BBT, how, you know, Prabhupada writing his books, how Hayagriva Prabhu went over the line. Now, he did tremendous service. Don't get me wrong. Hayagriva, when we read Bhagavad Gita, when we read first canto, second canto, third canto, and fourth canto, we're reading Srila Prabhupada through Hayagriva's editing. We're reading right now, every time we read a purport. This is his editing. So it's tremendous. You know, a great service. But at the same time, he was faulty in some ways, and he went over the line, and he took something out that shouldn't have been taken out. The Prabhupada's opinion on the moonshot. Right? So that judgment, that's the difficult part, you see. What, you know. But my point here is that how we should regard Srila Prabhupada, how we should regard a spiritual master, on the level of God, on the same worship should be there, same respect, and provided there's Shabde Perichinishnatam Brahmanubhashamashayam and Shrotayam Brahmanishtam, you know, fixed in Brahman, detached from material things, very learned. Who can tell me what are those, the three main criteria for acharya? It means to be an acharya. Yes, Prabhu. Okay, that's true, but that's not what I'm getting at. Anyone else? There's three. Okay, that's good. Go ahead. That's a little bit too sutra-ish. Time and circumstances. That's there, but that's not what I'm getting at. Okay. Yes. No. Okay. That's the criterion given in the first verse for making disciples all over the world. Bhrigu? That's closer. These three things are given. And that's actually in a verse in the Shastra that Prabhupada usually wouldn't quote the Sanskrit, but it appears in the first chapter, Adi Lila. You can look that up. He knows the Shastra. That's the first thing. Shabde Padev. Saturated. Just as Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya says, Kiba Vipa Kima Nasa Shudakere Noi, Ye Krishna Tattva Veta, Se Guru Hoy. He knows the truth of Krishna and Bhakti to Krishna, right, through the Shastra. So that's the first thing. Very learned. He lives according to the Shastra. That's the next thing. He's living Bhagavatam. And he teaches. Three things. That teaching means compassion. You know, which must come if you're actually learned in Krishna Tattva, then you have to be like Krishna. Krishna is also coming as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also coming as Krishna himself to give his instruction to the conditioned souls. So those three things, learned in the Shastra, living according to the Shastra, and teaching. Those are the three criteria for acharya. And Prabhupada, in a nice conversation, just to continue this theme, if you will, of omniscience, there's a conversation where Jayavaita Swami, who was then Jayavaita Das Brahmachari, was in anxiety about his service for the very reason I mentioned. And this, I don't have this printed out, but I know exactly what happened. And he's on a morning walk in 1975, just after the opening of the Krishna Balaram temple. Now, normally, you know, a young brahmachari like that wouldn't be on the walk, but he must have requested to go on the walk, and then he actually asked Prabhupada this question. We read in the Shastra how the acharya is beyond the four defects. He doesn't make mistakes, etc. That's in there, right? And yet we find that perhaps sometimes he may misquote a verse like that. How do we understand that? And so Prabhupada made it very clear there that the acharya is not Krishna. That one shouldn't think that he might make a mistake in quoting the verse. And he very directly says there he doesn't know like Krishna, he's not omniscient. And the point is that what is the acharya then? Prabhupada just given the class of previous day on Advaita Acharya. And we know Advaita Hanaitvatad Acharyam Bhakti Shankshana. Prabhupada picked up on that second line, right? Were you there? Just yesterday. So Acharyam, he's Advaita Acharya. Now, of course, he's Mahavishnu. He's actually God. But this description here says, Advai Acharyam Bhakti Shankshanath, that he's an Acharya because of his preaching of bhakti, because he's spreading bhakti. In other words, that compassionate sense and those criteria of the Acharya, none of which is omniscience, notice, simply being well-versed in the Shastra, being fixed according to the Shastra in behavior. Now, Acharya, literally, Achar means behavior. You know, that's Sadachar. And then teaching, those three things. So Prabhupada, he focused in on that and said, this is what the Acharya means. Not that he knows like Krishna, not that he's omniscient, and not that he might not make a mistake quoting a verse. This came up in Bhaktisiddhanta's day. There was an argument, said if Bhaktisiddhanta misquotes a verse, and what should they put it like it is into the newsletter or their publication, the Harmonist, whatever. And one of us says, no, if he quotes it like that, then we'll change the Shastra. That's the way he quoted it. And the other one said, no, people will criticize, we should change it. So Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, the one who said to edit it was correct. He was correct, because it is a service to the guru to present his presentation in the best light, so that others can accept it. Whereas the disciples, they can take anything. They'll take, the silence. We'll sit there for a silent for 45 minutes with Prabhupada and just be inspired, if that's what he wants to do, right? So when there's a movement, when there's a preaching movement like this, then there are so many services that need to be done for the Acharya. So it's a little far afield. The idea here is the relationship between Vaidarbhi and Malayadvija, is the relationship between the disciple and the guru. One of the things I didn't get to, which we'll get to more in the next few verses, is that when he disappears, there's all this anxiety, right? Because Malayadvija is about to leave his body and go back to Godhead. That's what's going to happen here. He's already realized soul, he understands perfectly, he's going back. Then what does Vaidarbhi do? Now suddenly, it's like the guru goes and we have these very important instructions from Prabhupada in these purports about how one should feel when the guru disappears, and one should take shelter of the vani, versus the vapu. Vapu is gone, but the vani remains, and the spiritual master remains in his vani. But this idea of like suddenly there's this great fear, what should we do now? And this brings up the other verse I didn't quote, which maybe we can just quote really quickly. This fear, again in this same section, about what is this verse about fear. That fear arises because of this absorption in the material energy, the second thing, the dualities of this world. Turning away from the Isha, the master. In this case, the husband, the guru, Krishna himself. We've turned away, and now we're trying to be the master. We're trying to exploit this world. And everything is upside down. Viparhiyo asmriti. We've forgotten Krishna. We're in the reverse situation. So what is the remedy? What is the remedy for the fear? Tanmayayato, by the influence of Maya, this has taken place. Now we're in this fearful condition because we've turned away from Krishna. Buddha, one who is intelligent, abhijay tam, one must worship him. The person who you turned away from, now start worshiping. In what way? Bhakti-yayakayesham. Worship that Isha with one-pointed bhakti. And here's the point. Guru Devatatma, regarding one's guru as one's worshipful deva and one's very self. This is the only way to escape from this fear. Because without that sense of surrender, and surrendering means one's independence, as I explained the other day, what does the word nama mean? It means giving up one's sense of independence and control of one's own body, mind, and words, of surrendering them to the Lord and to the Lord's representative. So without that sense of dependence on the guru and menial service, which nourishes that sense of dependence, one cannot stay fixed in the path of devotion, because we're so conditioned. We'll fall away. We'll go back to the trying to enjoy the facilities of this material world. So it's gotten a little late. Does anyone have any comments? Brigger, you're first.
One comment and one question. On that point of development, we just heard that this morning. Archita read that purport where he was saying how Lord Chaitanya sent Rupa and Sanatana Goswami to Vrindavan Lord Nityananda to Bengal, and he went to South India, and Prabhupada said, and he kindly left the spreading of Krishna consciousness in the rest of the world to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, right? So
right.
That was that. But also, and the question is, in Vaishnava etiquette, isn't there a thing where you're supposed to leave the mistakes of the acharya? And there's even a Sanskrit, what's it called?
Yeah.
So when does that come into the picture?
Just so this is where the judgment comes in. In other words, in what context do you leave them, and what context do you change them? If the spiritual master says, fix it up so it looks nice, then do you leave it? You know, he's asking you specifically. This is what he said to Hayagriva. Make it, you know, good. So then you have a dilemma. You don't want to do Arsha Prayog. Now, I'll give you an example of Arsha Prayog. When we published the Brahma Samhita back in 77, I think Prabhupada was on the planet, 77. There was some suggestion, well, this verse isn't right. Prabhupada was furious. He said, no, you leave it exactly like it is. Don't change it. I was a little proofreader at that time. I said, put in a comma here, a comma there. I said, no. Don't change it. In other words, that was Prabhupada's own sense of Arsha Prayog for his own guru. And he didn't want us to change that. Now, that Brahma Samhita, in one sense, you could say, that never became like a big mass distribution book. That was like more of an internal book for us. And if you read it, you'll see why. It's hard to, you know, understand the English. Prabhupada himself said, So that's a different kind. But if you have, you know, Prabhupada's lecture in the BTG, right? I used to edit those lectures for a few years, both here and in Miami and in Philadelphia. What do you do? You know, janma karma medivyam yojanati tatvata. Is it Arsha Prayog to leave it or to change it? You know. So this is where certain devotees have specific services that they're given and trusted. This is one of the main issues that came up with Hari Sari, that Hayagriva had been trusted, and now that trust had been damaged because he had taken something out that he had no business taking out. The thing about Prabhupada's a position on the moonshot. So this is a sacred trust. You know, just like Prabhupada entrusted the deities, you know, when he went to Melbourne, that famous story, you know, and he's praying to the Lord, well, I'm entrusting them to you, you know, and that was to run a worldwide movement, you have to do that, you know. So by the same token, he entrusted to his editors that they'll leave what needs to be left because it's Prabhupada's word. In one other example, if you go to the Macmillan Gita, you know, you'll find something missing. From the verse, from the purport to the verse, I always forget the number in 10th chapter, Krishna says, Nakshatrana Mahangshashi. Of nakshatras, which was the stars, I am the moon. Krishna says that. And in the purport, original purport, Prabhupada says, this shows that all of these stars up there are actually moons. They're just reflecting the light of the one sun. Whoa, you know, that's this big surrender. And didn't we learn in third grade that each of those stars is up there is a sun in itself? Or maybe a galaxy or something, but certainly not just another moon reflecting our sun. Prabhupada says it directly there. That's not there in the Macmillan Gita. Hayagriva couldn't accept it. He didn't think people would accept it. He just X'd it out. Arsha Prayog. He definitely, Mahabhatikramana, this is what happened, overstepping his authority. Prabhupada didn't notice it. Nobody noticed it until 1982 or 81 when Jayavaita Maharaj was going over carefully. Oh, we got to put this back in. So this was the case in which Jayavaita Das Brahmachari at that time, or maybe he was Swami at that point, was fixing an Arsha Prayog that had occurred earlier that no one knew about. So it's a sacred trust. And if we mess up, then, you know, we have to be fixed. We have to be corrected. But it's not cut and dried, which, you know, to change may be a greater service than not to change. That's the thing. Archana, you had something at one point.
Thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. Thanks. Obviously, this is a subject that can be discussed at length and has been. There have been seminars given and all that, so we don't want to turn into that. Everybody has service this morning. But the point that you made is that Prabhupada wanted these books distributed widely. He wanted them accepted by scholars, institutions, and such. He himself started that process in India by taking them to libraries and to booksellers. So he wanted these books to be polished. And he knew that his natural English as a second language presentation was not necessarily the most polished. So he asked, created this book trust and asked his editors, and then there's that whole famous sequence where Jayadwaita Maharaj was showing each change that he proposed.
Right.
And Prabhupada would say, yes, that's okay. Yes, that's okay. Yes, that's okay. Then he got to the point where he just told him, just whatever Jayadwaita does is okay with me. In other words, he had given him that trust. That doesn't mean that it can't be abrogated. Doesn't mean that he can't later on do something that's not would not have been accepted. But without Prabhupada here himself to say that, then it becomes, as Prabhupada created an institution, that all everything should go through the collective bodies, beginning with the GBC, and we should be willing to hear feedback on whatever the service is, whether we're sweeping the room or worshiping the deity or editing books. We should be always willing to hear feedback from others. If we ever get to the point where we don't want any feedback, something is wrong.
Right.
So it's always appreciated. Don't think that it's not the devotees who work at the BBT when somebody says, you know, Prabhu, this, that, that. We get every day devotees writing. There's a conference on PAMHO, mistakes in English books.
Yeah.
And devotees read through it, they find something, they send it to that conference, and it's all taken into account when the next printing comes along.
Right.
So nobody should ever feel that, you know, we're insular, we don't listen. That's not the case.
All right. Two quick comments. I don't know if there's any more. You're right, we can go on, but we have to stop. Just yesterday, by way of supporting what you just said, and this regular occurrence, I got an email from a devotee who says, we're having a big conflict here. I don't even know where he is. He didn't tell me where. About one word that was removed from chapter 3, text 24, was it? Yeah, I think it was that. I can look it up. In the Bhagavad Gita, where the last sentence of the purport says, one who follows the injunctions of Varnashram can make advancement. And it had been changed. That was Macmillan. And when it was one who follows the injunctions or the orders of a higher authority can make good advancement. I said, why was that Varnashram taken out? There's obviously a lot of advocates of Varnashram Dharma and wherever he is. So he wasn't challenging. He said, well, can you explain it? What's going on? So I went into the original transcript that we have, and I saw that Prabhupada originally said, although he had mentioned Varnashram previously in that purport, at the end of the purport, he said, one who follows the injunctions of higher authorities can make good advancement. And that's why it was taken out, not because we have something against Varnashram, but because Prabhupada said it differently. So, and just one quick note on this subject, since we're dealing with this, just for you to know. One of the main, in this Arsha Prayoga, going beyond. Now, this incident that Archita Prabhu mentioned, this occurred in 1976 when Jayadwaita Swami went to the first New York Ratha Yatra. Prabhupada was there, it was June or July 1976. And he came a little early, and he visited Prabhupada. He had all these corrections, mostly to the translations of the second chapter, first canto. Very important chapter. It begins Savai Pung Sang Baro Dharma, all those verses that Prabhupada spoke on so often. So he had corrections to there and maybe a few other verses, only the translations. And what he had done, he had gone back to the original Delhi Bhagavatams, which are now been printed nicely in facsimile form. You can check them. And he had gone back and he checked the editing of Hayagriva Prabhu on those verses. And he saw that there were some discrepancies. And so he restored the translations to what they had been, what Prabhupada had meant originally. Now the critical factor of this is that Prabhupada had already been giving lectures on this chapter, as he did from the very beginning, especially those verses of Amungsam, etc. He had heard the verses read to him from the original editing of Hayagriva, the translations, several verses, 10, 12 of them. He didn't say a word. He had heard them read to him. And then he just went on with his class. These are the purport had been read, whatever. Then when Hayagriva, when Jayadwaita Maharaj came, he started reading his translations, as Archita mentioned. For the first couple of ones, and Prabhupada stopped him. He said, what have you done? I have returned it back to closer to what you had. So but then it is okay. Now, why is this significant? It means that even though Prabhupada had heard these translations and read to him, he hadn't heard them and read them with an editorial eye. He wasn't considering, comparing it to the original and so forth. So he accepted Jayadwaita's change. This is Prabhupada personally accepting those changes unseen because he trusted his editor. And if you go and compare them, you will see that he did a good job. Yes, indeed, he returned, and some very important discrepancies were fixed, even though Prabhupada had heard those translations read to him. So just because he hears them doesn't mean that he wouldn't accept editorial changes by his trusted editors. All glories to the Prabhupada.
First thing is immediately turn around, because now we're having this problem.